Thanks, Maysoon. So, good morning, everyone. What I'm going to try and do today is talk about why I think we need to improve our nitrogen fertilizer guidelines for farmers as we start getting into more site-specific management. So I'm going to give you my bias, and then I'm going to hopefully back it up with a little background data to show why what we're doing isn't good enough. And then I'm going to introduce the model, and then just show you one thing about trying to implement this model in a GIS context. I had some other things that I wanted to present, but actually I forgot about this particular talk, and so I put it together Sunday, and there was some information I wanted to get from farmers to show you, but I didn't have their permission, so I can't show you everything. So anyway, my bias on nitrogen fertilizer recommendations is that a priori nitrogen recommendations are really of very little value in rain-fed environments. Because if you don't know the weather, nitrogen affects, or weather affects nitrogen transformations and losses, and so if you're not following the weather, I don't see how you can possibly come up with an accurate fertilizer recommendation. And the recommendations that we use, in the at least in the Midwest, are based on best management practices, so maybe a little starter fertilizer followed by side dress nitrogen. Well, we have an awful lot of producers that fall apply anhydrous ammonia in Illinois and Iowa. We have a lot of farmers that will early spring pre-plant their nitrogen, and so in those cases, we have no guidance for those producers. And then if you actually look at the yield monitor data from a combine, you'll have at least a 2-to-1 variation in yield. And so that's telling us that, you know, it's some combination of productivity potential and, you know, less than optimum nitrogen rates, which may also be on the high end, excessive nitrogen rates. And so I just think that, you know, we have a lot of things that we need to do. And so the reason that I started this modeling approach is for those reasons. And when I think about a modeling approach, if I had my way, the model should account for historical yields, because even if you look at the soils database that underpins a GIS, there are a lot of yield variations that cannot be explained by soil properties. And so historical yields would kind of add another layer of data as far as productivity. Then obviously weather. When you start modeling, you find out how important weather is, and you also find out how bad our weather data are. And so weather is really important, soil and topographic factors. Then you need kind of the management things, the planting date, the stage of crop growth development, any fertilizer that you're going to apply or you've already applied. That all has to be incorporated into the model. And so I just want to give you kind of a little background about why I think that what we're working with doesn't work very well is, you know, when we were first making fertilizer recommendations based on yield goals in the Midwest, our fertilizer recommendations kind of went from anywhere from about 100 to about 225 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare for, you know, 180 bushel corn, 11.3, you know, metric tons per hectare. And back when those recommendations were made, that was a really, really top yield. Well, if you extend our fertilizer recommendations out, where farmers are now getting much higher yields, our nitrogen recommendations really kind of get a little bit out of whack. And so in the Midwest, most states have adopted kind of the maximum return to nitrogen approach. And so it's no longer yield goal-based, but our nitrogen fertilizer recommendations haven't really changed. Okay, so instead of going from 100 to 225 kilograms per hectare, we're going from 110 to 225 kilograms per hectare. I just don't see that as a very significant improvement. Okay, and then furthermore, if you look at the response data, this is from Indiana. If this green bar is our optimum fertilizer nitrogen rate, well, we're right about a third of the time. You know, maybe a little bit more, but there are the range in optimum nitrogen rates. If the optimum range is 175 to 200, the actual range of optimum nitrogen rates is anywhere from 100 to 250. Okay, so yeah, sure, we're hitting the midpoint. We're right some of the time, and we're not too far off most of the time. But what about these times when we need a lot more nitrogen or a lot less nitrogen? So optimum nitrogen rate obviously varies across locations. This is just within the state of Indiana. And you take any individual location, and the optimum nitrogen rate varies to there too. Okay, and it's varying because of the weather. The soils haven't changed, the management hasn't changed, but the weather has changed. Planting dates changed a little bit, and so all of these things impact yield. Now, if you try to account for these variations and attribute a lot of the difference in nitrogen response to net soil and mineralization, and then you account for that, well, then everything falls on a pretty straight line, and so the total nitrogen required to grow a really good corn crop is about 300 kilograms of N per hectare. Okay. So as when I looked at all that data, I said, we have to do better than this. And so, you know, the question is, can we improve our nitrogen recommendations with a model? And so here's the model that I came up with. We have a hydrologic submodel, and so we have an irrigation scheduling program that tracks soil moisture. So if you're not irrigating, you're just tracking soil moisture. And then we have a soil temperature submodel that really just takes the running average of 7 days of weather and attributes that to soil temperature. Now, we haven't addressed the damping effect or the lag times associated with depth, but you'll see in a minute that even without this, the model works pretty well. So this is kind of, we basically just went through the literature. You know, there's a million papers on any single part of the nitrogen cycle, and we found the things that we thought worked the best. We stitched them together, modified them all so we could pull on national databases to make this model run. And so it's a daily time step model that determines the amount of manure or fertilizer, urea, ammonium, or nitrate that's been applied. That's the first step each day. Then we determine the amount of organic N that's going to mineralize, determine the amount of urea that's either volatilized or has been hydrolyzed because urea is soluble as well as volatile, and then we determine the amount of ammonium nitrogen that's converted to nitrate and the amount of nitrogen taken up by the crop, and then we start determining our losses. So how much nitrate nitrogen will be lost to denitrification and how much nitrate nitrogen will be lost through leaching. Okay, and so we just run this every single day. And so to run the model, the input data that are required is the location. From the location, we get the soil types that are present in the field. Okay, and we also get the topographic data. And so then we just pull on the NRCS Soil Data Mart to get, you know, soil properties, soil texture, width, depth. We get organic matter. We like to use the actual soil test results to get pH and organic matter. If those aren't available, then we go to the Soil Data Mart. Okay. I don't know how many of you played with the Soil Data Mart. Some of the information is pretty good, and some of it really sucks. Okay. And then we take daily high and low air temperature and precipitation and irrigation. And I'm telling you that this weather determines whether your model is going to work very well. If you don't have good weather, the model's not going to work. Then we just have the fertilizer nitrogen source placement and timing of any fertilizer that's already been applied. And then the planting and emergence date. You know, if you get the planting date at 110 growing degree days, we kind of get the emergence date. And then relative maturity of that hybrid. Now, we found that, at least in the Midwest, humidity and wind speed doesn't affect the sensitivity of the model, but we're running the model out in Arizona right now on really windy, arid conditions, and so we're going to see how much of an impact it has when you get into those kind of conditions. So then we have our model outputs. Okay, and so this is just a summary of what the model looks like, the outputs of the model after you run it for a year. And so this yellow bar, or yellow line here, kind of looks like calf scours green, is basically nitrogen mineralization. And we start our model on October 1st, the kind of beginning of the water year. Then this green line is nitrogen uptake by the plant. And the orange and red lines here are ammonium and nitrate. So you can see we planted, I think it was about May 1st in this particular situation, and then we side dressed around June 10th. And so we have two spikes of ammonium and nitrate from UAN that was applied. And then we have our losses. So we have nitrate, nitrogen losses, and we have our denitrification losses. Okay. And so from that, we kind of can predict the amount of nitrogen being taken up by a crop. So the first thing I did is Jim Camberato and Bob Nielsen have been doing a lot of nitrogen response trials in Indiana, so I took some of their data and I plotted our model's simulation of nitrogen uptake versus corn grain yield response to different fertilizer and inputs. And so for any individual research trial, I mean, I don't have an R-square less than 0.97. I just sat on this for about 2 months because there's no way anything works that well. And so finally, I got the courage to go talk to Camberato so he could tell me what autocorrelation I had and that the model was BS. But he said, well, I have a bunch of other data where we have some late side dress applications and things like that. So we plotted everything on the line, and then we looked at the model prediction event uptake versus measured grain yield again. So it's not relative grain yield, it's actually measured grain yield, and I still have an R-square of 0.8. We don't have any soil tests for phosphorus or potassium or anything that works anywhere near that well. So I was really excited about that, but that's just kind of in central Indiana and northern Indiana. So we have different soils in here, but it's still in Indiana. So I talked to Charlie Wortman at Nebraska, and he had a bunch of nitrogen response trial data from the irrigated soils in Nebraska. Well, on irrigated soils, you know, you get a little bit more of a linear relationship. But again, when the model tops out, so does yield. And so I was pretty excited about that. And they said, hey, I have some soil nitrate data, you know, that we could look at with the model. So I said, send it to me. And so here's the date when they soil sampled. So I'm running the model on that weather, and then I'm trying to predict the amount of soil nitrate nitrogen that's present. And so these are all in kind of mid-April to early April. And so they either sampled to 0.9, you know, 3 feet or 4 feet, you know, 0.9 or 1.2 meters. And this is the amount of nitrate nitrogen that they measured. And then this is the amount of nitrate nitrogen that the model predicted. So I was kind of off here, 35 versus 47. So that was kind of disappointing. It was the first run we made. But then the next run was 36. Our model predicted 35. Then the next run was 76. Our model predicted 75. And this was really exciting for me because they're both sampled to a 3 foot depth, and we had, you know, more than twice as much nitrate nitrogen measured, and we had more than twice as much nitrate nitrogen predicted. And then when we went to 4 feet, things got even better, 88 versus 83, 95, 98, or 99, 95, 99, 95, 97. So that really, really kind of has me pretty stoked that this model has some real potential. But that's all done on kind of smaller, you know, landscapes, you know, small plots. In the real world, yield varies quite a bit, okay? And it varies with soils. It's not directly tied to soils, but there are areas in the field that yield higher than other areas. This is 2008, same field in 2012 where we had a drought. Those high-yielding areas still show up, okay? So the objective now is, can I replicate this nitrogen yield response with my model? Here's another case from one of my grad students. We had a manure study where we had different rates of manure, different timings of manure, different nitrogen rates, and the only thing that mattered was what soil you were growing in a drought year. This soil has higher organic matter, higher water holding capacity, had much greater yields here than we had in the other soils. Okay. So I tried to do this real quick, and so we have up at Northeast Indiana, we have a field where we have 6% organic matter as mapped versus 1.5% organic matter soils. And so I kind of combined a lot of stuff in the model, and I predicted what our yields would be. So this is just high yield, low yield, and then kind of moderate yield. And then this is the combined measured yield data. So it shows that the model works, but the model is limited to the soil polygon boundaries. This soil polygon boundary really extends more like this. And the low-yielding area that Boyer sand with 1.5% organic matter is over here. So I'm pretty excited about that. I have a bunch of larger field-scale trial data, but I can't show it to you because I didn't get permissions to do it. Sometimes the model duplicates the yield variability, and sometimes it doesn't. Okay, so I have more work to do. So I want to test the model across different soils and climatic conditions to see how well we can replicate the yields that we see with the combine. And then I would need to improve the net precipitation based on landscape and topographic position, and also working with Philip Owens to get a continuous map of soil properties, because we don't go from 6% organic matter to 1.5% organic matter when we hit a soil polygon boundary. You know, so we have to have a continuous map. And then add some more crops. So that's kind of a quick overview of where we're at with our model. So with that, Maysoon, I'll take any questions if we have time.
Thank you very much.